20 months ago, Illinois Republican Mike Boss took the oath of office as congressman from the 12th District in Illinois. It covers much of the Metro East, the district does. He is seeking re-election next week. We have spoken previously with his election rivals, Paula Bradshaw of the Green Party and C.J. Barr-Civic, the Democratic candidate. Congressman Boss joins me by phone. Nice to talk to you again, Congressman.
Thanks for having me on, Don. Thank you very much.
We haven't had too many opportunities to talk since you were elected to your first term.
I think about three. Yeah.
Three. Well, that's not enough. That's not enough. We'll have to make
right.
if you win
we'll
the
make more next,
if
we'll
you
make
win
more.
If you win the election, we'll talk more. But let me just ask you, as the term winds down, is being a congressman all that you thought it would be at this point?
It's a very, very busy life. My wife and I have actually had that conversation before about, you know, how it compared to being in the state legislature. And then a lot of people have heard me say that before, but I jokingly say it's kind of like the old job on steroids. It's a lot busier, requires a lot more staffing, but it's still the same thing. You know your area. You go out and work for your area. You work and fight to try to improve employment. Discover other issues that are out there, working with your communities, keeping in constant contact with them. You know, since doing this, we've had teletown hall meetings. We have town hall meetings. We have every chamber and every rotary that we can meet with and keeping in touch that way, along with school boards every county throughout the district, and that's 11 and one-third county. So it's a pretty big district.
Do you have any down-ballot concerns in this election? Illinois looks very, very blue at this point, given all the polls and what's happening at the top of the state ticket. You concerned about that?
I don't. I mean, I think our polls look good, but the thing is, you leave nothing to chance. That's why we're out there working every day, and we've got people on the street. Our phone lines are doing what they're supposed to do. Our callers are are doing what they're doing, and I thank them for that. And we got door knockers on the street every day. As far as the effect of the overall president's race, the district is a fairly conservative district. It's got a lot of Democrat in it, a lot of labor, but it's still, you know, they're pro-Second Amendment, pro-life, strong, hardworking people that pay attention to their local politics, too.
You support Donald Trump?
I do. Let me tell you, I don't like some of the things he said. As a father and a husband and a grandfather of seven granddaughters, the one comment that came out, I'm very, very frustrated with. But that being said, I know that whenever I've had a person who has said boldly that she's going to close down what coal mine or what coal jobs are left in my district when we're fighting for everyone, or whenever I've watched her deal with the issues on Benghazi, or what's coming out now on the emails and the concerns that I have there. As a Marine, I had to handle top secret information, and I was told pretty clearly that if I was able to any way, shape, or form compromise that, if it was in wartime, I'd be shot, and if it was in peacetime, I would be in prison for life. And I think that the second most powerful position in the United States, when you blow it that bad, it's ridiculous to ask for the second or ask for the first.
You mentioned in your response to that, you mentioned coal mines. What kind of work are you doing in the district with regard to coal miners and the coal mines?
Right. Well, let me tell you, there's a couple things, or a lot of things we're actually doing. One, we're working to try to repeal as many of the regulations that have been put in place over the last 8 years that were actually put us in such a bad situation. You know, over 600 regulations, rules have been put in place by Obama since he took office. With that, if you calculate that out to what it costs, and now there's three other major rules that could be devastating that are out there as well that are still moving forward, and we've been fighting them in court. We've been dealing, working with our coal miners to try to get those reduced, and like I said, take those burdens off the back of coal to let us continue to mine coal. Because the thing is, other countries are burning them without clean coal-burning fire plants. We have clean coal-burning fire plants in our district and around the state. My opponent made a statement, I think it's kind of funny, that I didn't sign on to a bill, but that bill affected not one single coal mine or coal-fired power plant in my district or the selling of that coal. And so, you know, that's some research that he didn't quite do well enough. But we have been working side by side. I got the United Mine Workers endorsement, which is a very big event for a Republican to receive. Of course, my whole family were from a coal mine on my mother's side. So, and we know what's involved with the business, and it is a business that can be used. That doesn't mean I'm not all in for all electrical provision to be able to go after solar or wind. But when you look at Illinois, solar and wind only produces about 6% of the energy, and that is when the wind's blowing and the sun's shining. The reality is that 40% of our energy in Illinois comes from coal. We've got to make sure that we keep those prices down so that those people who are on set incomes can do what they need to do. And those companies that are creating products to be sold around the world have it to where they have it affordable electrical energy prices so that they can go ahead and continue to compete.
You mentioned your opponent, and I assume that you're talking about Mr. Barsivek. However, yes. Both of your opponents, Paula Bradshaw as well, have been critical of you for your inability to lure the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency to the Scott Air Force Base area. Are you convinced you did all that you could have done to make that happen?
Let me tell you how proud I am of how we work together in a bipartisan manner. I think it's funny that my opponent, that CJ, actually wants to bring that up. I work side by side with Dick Durbin on the national level. I work with former Congressman Jerry Costello, who was right in the middle of this and working side by side with him. With the local elected officials, both Democrat and Republican, we worked together to try to get that there. I think we still, we presented the best case, and I still believe that it's the best case. And whenever I say that, here's the reason why. For national security, for military readiness, cost to taxpayers, public safety for surrounding areas, and recruiting young people to work in the facility, we offered the best possible site. And whenever it was turned down, and then we caught some problems that existed with the Army Corps of Engineers study and some problems and a confusion that was involved with it, that's why I immediately asked for an independent inspector general's investigation by the Army Corps of Engineers and the Department of Defense. Now, we still haven't got those results. We're still arguing to try to get those results. But we did everything we can. And I'm a little bothered by the fact that CJ basically said that, I couldn't deliver the mail. Well, if you look at the report as it was whenever we were trying to get it to the area, about 600 local residents, many of them elected officials, judges, county board members, private citizens, and concerned citizens wrote in and actually gave letters of support to try to move this forward. When you look through those 600-plus letters, not one of them is from C.J. Barisevic. So maybe he's wanting to say, I couldn't deliver the mail, but he couldn't write the letter.
Well, when you're an incumbent and running for re-election, you have a target on your back. And obviously,
yeah.
we've talked to your two opponents prior to our conversation here. Another concern that he has is what he calls your flip-flop on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, voted for it and then against it.
No. First off, let's be very clear, because that's a problem that he keeps having. TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, has never been voted on. The only thing that was voted on was the Trade Promotion Authority, which gave the president the option to negotiate for any trade deal, not just TPP, but all trade deals. And so, but what it did, I was able to put the language in that would be the counter-dumping language that had to be put in. Through arguing in the back rooms, we actually got a bill got that changed so that our steel mills can actually protect themselves quicker than they could under any other TPA program. Once that was in there, then I supported TPA for another reason as well, because then we, as not only just Congress, but we, the American people, could see that trade deal long enough to read it to figure out if we wanted to support it or not. And after reading it, it's 15,000 pages long, by the way. After reading it, I came out very, very quickly and said, I do not support TPP. And here's why. There's not enough in there to stop currency manipulations where countries manipulate their currency to put themselves at an advantage over when we're in whether it's steel or anything else. There's also concerns we have, and there's some banking rules and some concerns we have there. But probably one of the biggest concerns I have is that that particular TPP, that particular trade deal, does not allow for if all of a sudden another country wants to come in. Let's say China actually gets a free trade status with the World Trade Organizations, which they don't have right now, which they shouldn't get because they about 80% of their businesses are controlled by the government. So, but if they were granted that, that it would not come back to the United States Congress for approval to allow them into that deal. So for him to continue down the same path, I'll give him this. He's real good about staying on message, and he's real good about quoting exactly what Nancy Pelosi tells him to say.
All right. Well, how is it detrimental to your district?
How is TPP detrimental to my district?
Yeah.
It's detrimental to my district because when you start dealing with the steel mills and the concerns that we would have there, and it, not just my district, but the United States as a whole, because I want fair trade. Quite often you hear free trade, but free trade isn't always fair. What we have to do is make sure that these trade agreements that we go into are fair. Fair to whether you're in agriculture, whether you're in the steel industry, whether you're in the oil production industry, whether you're in whatever widget might be created in this United States that's going to enter into the trade agreements that we are making. We want to make sure that it doesn't allow foreign countries to cheat. And I don't believe that TPP keeps that from happening.
We want to give you an opportunity to answer some of the things that your opponents have said. So let me quickly go through a couple of them. Another charge was that you are against equal pay for women. What is your position there?
Let me tell you, I've got a wife, I've got two daughters, and I got 7 granddaughters, and you better believe that I want them to have the opportunity for any job that's out there, and you better believe I want them paid at the level that anyone else doing those jobs would get. So that is the most ridiculous statement. I've never, ever made a statement, any other statement besides that one right there. If equal pay, you betcha. I believe in equal pay, and that's as clear as I can say it.
He's criticized you for voting to freeze Pell Grants to make college loans and college loans more affordable.
Let me tell you how that happens, okay? There's a thing, there is a bill, and several of these accusations that he makes. When you go to Congress, and this is one thing that the American people need to know, at the end of any bill, there's a time where an amendment can be placed on, it's on an amendment, it's called a motion to recommit. And then they can take and put any amendment or try to put any amendment they want on, whether it is germane to the bill or ingermane to the bill. And Nancy Pelosi's leadership team is known for when we've got a bill that's ready to pass, they're going to move forward the very last thing, and they're going to make a motion to recommit. And then they make a motion on a bill, and it may have been that one. It may have been Pell Grants. It may have been the list can go on and on of what they put out there. But it does not. It's not germane with the bill, and it would cause the bill to fail and cause the bill to not be able to be moved forward. So for making sure that government keeps working, that's a procedural move that you have to say no. And then Nancy and her team come back and say, oh, well, then you voted against this. No, you didn't. And let me tell you, we've got to do everything we can to make students' lives affordable, and we've got to deal with to make sure their debt for schools is affordable, and also that we need to make sure that not only do we do it just we need to work on our trade schools and things like that so that people aren't just forced to just into a degree that they may not want, but actually give them the opportunity to work in the field that they desire and make it as affordable as possible.
Well, how far are you?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, how far are you willing to go to make it more affordable? There are some proposals on the other side, you know, that would actually make it free, at least community college.
Let me tell you what First off, I don't think that we as a nation can afford to give education away for free. I do believe that we have to give opportunities like what we worked on this year, which is allow a savings plans that do allow for setback and tax exempt when you put money back for your children or your grandchildren, so that that can be investing in the future for our children. Now, we need to work to try to bring college education, the price down, in working with our universities to figure out where the overrunning costs are. You know, Illinois has had a problem with that, and as they've tried to work through their budget. And I've worked with them in that aspect for years. Believe me, I work every day with the people at Southern Illinois University, which is the second largest employer in this district, and work with them every day to try to make sure that we keep our enrollments up, that we keep that our schools are affordable. However, the investments do need to be made from state level, and when you saw Illinois slide off of that, that's the problem that they're facing in Illinois. But it's not just a problem there; it's a problem nationwide, and we can look at that. But do I believe that we should swing the gates open? And you know what? Every time you see the federal government expand programs and or do something and claim that they're going to take it over, they usually mess it up. And Obamacare is one of the best examples of that. So I don't know if I want to mess up education to the level that we've messed up health care.
You know, I assume that a number of your constituents are former employees of Granite City Steel, which is obviously in another district. Just wondering if you see any remedy.
No, that's my district.
Oh, it is. I thought it was in
no, that's,
Rodney Davis.
That's why the language we put in TPA was so vitally important, so we could make sure that we got that anti-dumping in there so that we could actually have a quicker reaction time to when these foreign countries, in this case China and Korea, start dumping low-grade steel into the market. And so that's why, because right after I was elected, was when the first notice came out. Since that time, and moving forward, there were probably about 18 different actions in less than 17 months that my office did, working with both union members and the company to do everything we can to make sure that the dumping was stopped, that the product is moved through the pipeline as quick as we can to try to put the steel mill back to work. I do believe that they'll be back to work. We're working with U.S. Steel to encourage them, one, to diversify what they produce there, but two, if the oil prices, it's kind of a double-edged sword, but if oil prices come up, the cold rolls or the rolled steel that they produce are used in the drilling and also the transfer of the oil fields. So as you see that come up, we believe, from what we talked to U.S. Steel about, because of the investment that they've made in Granite City of upgrading before the shutdown, that they're going to come back as soon as that market does.
Have you taken a position, I assume you have, on the transportation lockbox amendment that is on the ballot in Illinois this time?
And I have always thought that we should not allow transportation funds to be reached into. The question is, and this is an important question now, obviously the attorneys that have been working on this feel that it's okay. What we did discover in my years in Illinois is that quite often whenever we tried to create a lockbox for different issues, whatever it was, so that it's called a no sweeping of the funds, the courts would always rule that all general fund money are all money that comes into the coffers is general fund money. So it'll be interesting to see if it passes. I think the people should be wise in doing that, because we should make sure they're making the investment in the infrastructure. But to say, will it pass court muster, I don't know.
Only 30 seconds left. Do you think we're going to get past this this kind of gridlock we've had in Congress for the last several years?
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. And let me tell you that I will work, because I've worked across the aisle with all kinds of people in the state of Illinois, and since being in the U.S. Congress, have worked side by side with both Democrat and Republicans to advance many causes, and I look forward to keep doing that. Unfortunately, it doesn't sell as well in the media, so they talk about the ones on each side that are arguing all the time.
Well, we shall soon see. And Congressman Mike Bost, thank you so much for being with us.
John, thank you.
Good luck on Tuesday. Mr. Bost is seeking re-election to his 12th district seat in next Tuesday's election. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Don.
I would like to invite our audience to be part of the St. Louis On the Air, a special broadcast Wednesday at noon, a live post-election discussion in the community room at UMSL at Grand Center. We'll hear from political scientist Terry Jones and St. Louis Public Radio reporters about who won and who lost, about statewide measures that did and did not pass, and what it all means. We'll also answer audience questions. That's a live, in-person St. Louis On the Air Wednesday. Please arrive by 11:45. The event's free. No tickets are needed. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.